one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
And the only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. This is WLS AM 890, your home for the Chicago White Sox. It's the Sox and Blue Jays today at a very warm U.S. Cellular Field. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks for hanging out with us. We got a half an hour today and an hour and a half tomorrow. We start at 11 on Sunday morning. We got plenty to get to both today and tomorrow. Lots going on here at the ballpark and plenty going on with this club as well. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Same as always is. You can give us a call and we can talk White Sox for the next half hour or so up into the pregame start for the Sox and Blue Jays, game two of this series. You can do the whole, texting thing. 68683. You are not allowed to text the show if you're driving, however. It's just not safe enough. 68683. You do have to put WLS AM in the text for us to read it. You can do the whole Twitter thing as well. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. You get it us. We get your thoughts on the show. That's the saying. That's how we do it here. Lots to get to, and we'll start with this. There's a little bit of future here at the ballpark today. There's a little bit of present that's quite different than anything we've seen so far in the big league season for the White Sox, and it's been fun to watch kind of all those things take place on the field this morning as we're leading up to this ball game. Here's what I'm talking about. Batting practice went on about an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours ago, is when Zach Collins started hitting on the field for the very first time in his professional career, his first appearance at U.S. Cellular Field, albeit batting practice. The turtle was over the home plate area, and still fun to watch him, too. Of course, Collins, the first-round pick of the Chicago White Sox, a catcher out of the University of Miami, 10th overall. Unfortunately, the Hurricanes bowed out of the College World Series, but he's here and signed and ready to roll. Fun to watch him take a couple of cuts in the cage, talk with a few people who were involved in the drafting of one Zach Collins. There were some butterflies for everybody, and really excitement, though. Really, really just kind of excitement to watch the young kid take his first cuts in a White Sox batting practice outfit and the stripes and everything. He hit a couple out. He parked a few. It is hot in this ballpark, and the ball is going to jump today as Miguel Gonzalez and R.A. Dickey get things started in about an hour and a half or so. But it is a fun sight to see. A couple of guys, actually, as the White Sox get into batting practice as well. A couple of guys parking ones about 15, 20 rows up in left field for the right-handers. So a lot of action in this ballpark today. More going on in the lineup for the White Sox. Alex Avila is going to work out of the DH spot this afternoon against R.A. Dickey, the knuckleballer. Deonner Navarro is going to handle the catching duties. We talked with, in fact, it was something I asked Robin Ventura back in spring training and fairly early on, whether or not he'd be willing to, whether he wanted to use a catcher as a DH on a regular basis, on a semi-regular basis, or whether that was going to be something that, you know, they shied away from. It is kind of a dicey situation, or I suppose can be a dicey situation, having both catchers in the lineups like that, but you can get away with it. God forbid someone were to get hurt. But Alex Avila, and we'll listen to Robin's comments about him and about the way he's been swinging it over the last handful of days. You want him in the lineup as much as you can get him in there. In his last 9 trips to the plate, he's hitting .625. The on base is .667. Had a couple of hard hit balls that did not fall for hits throughout the course of June that would have maybe otherwise scored runs or been extra bases. In the month of June, Alex Avila is hitting .317. The on base, which is always good, especially out of the catcher spot, but Avila really knows the strike zone up there. On base of .404, and he's slugging .488. Certainly those are numbers that you want in a lineup, especially as a left-hander facing a knuckleballer today, a right-hander and R.A. Dickey, too. So that's the matchup today. And really, Robin spent a lot of time talking about why today and why Alex Avila and his ability to work out of the DH spot. Deonna Navarro going to do the catching today for Miguel Gonzalez. Let's see, what else do we have to get to today? David Robertson made a little bit of his own career history last night. He notched his 100th save of his career, 53rd with the White Sox. He is tied for 11th in franchise history with the highest total there. He's converted 80.6% of his career save opportunities. Certainly a pretty good number. Certainly had to dance out of a little bit of trouble last night. An infield hit that went to Tyler Saladino and wasn't able to. Tyler played the rough hop off the body, wasn't able to locate it as it caromed off of his chest. Just kind of bad luck there. Couldn't beat out Darwin Barney to third base. That goes for an infield hit. That loaded the bases. And then Robertson, as manager Robin Ventura said after the ballgame, he bowed up a little bit, struck out Edwin Encarnacion, and got Michael Saunders to pop up for the White Sox 37th win of the season. They got a chance to go back over 500 today as well with a win. And really, you know, as you look at the schedule here over the next week and a half, the next 2 weeks or so, you know, you're playing a ball club, the Blue Jays, that are absolutely a good one, that is a good one, but one that you've won four straight from so far this year. The Twins are in town in the middle of the week series, the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series. The Twins have dropped every game to the White Sox, and we appreciate that from them. White Sox have taken care of business there. And then you travel to go see a Houston Astros team that is putting things together a lot better than the start of their season. That's a ball club that's starting to come around and play to. I mean, there were prognosticators and predictors that thought that the Astros could compete and be one of those teams that's in the conversation for, you know, maybe even a best record in the American League kind of thing before the season started. You had a Yankees ball club that's hanging in there with everything they've got, but is a little bit of an older ball club in the beginning of next week. And then you've got three with the Atlanta Braves who, you know, with the Twins, have the worst record in Major League Baseball. You have a chance to get right here over the next 2 weeks or so before the All-Star break. That, of course, on the 10th, the final game of the unofficial first half of the season. And then you get 4 days off, Home Run Derby on the 11th. All-Star game on the 12th, and then they're back at it the 15th in Anaheim against the Angels. A little more West Coast baseball for you. We come back. We have some comments from Robin Ventura about batting Alex Avila out of the DH spot today. Both catchers in the lineup. And we'll also listen to Robin's comments on David Robertson getting out of some trouble last night, notching his 100th career save, getting the job done. Robin likes to term it, and a lot of people do, likes to term those situations really just the pass or fail. You either win the ball game or you lose the ball game there. And the measure of getting that job done, while it can be hairy to watch and certainly full of drama, it's a pass-fail situation. Robertson was able to get the job done last night. Should tell you this, every Monday throughout the season, the White Sox will feature a flash sale in which 200 tickets in select lower-level seating categories for upcoming games will be available for only $10. Each sale runs for 24 hours or whenever all the tickets are gone. For full details, you just visit whitesox.com/flash sale. That's whitesox.com/flash sale. We're going to hit the break. You can still join the show. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We come back. We'll do. Let's talk a little bit about the lineup today and how it's shaping up. As I mentioned, Alex Avila and Deonna Navarro both in there today. Avi Garcia going to get the day off from the DHing role. We'll go through the starter too. Miguel Gonzalez looking to bounce back after, or for a second straight start after a rough one out 3 rounds ago. Well, I suppose it would be 3 rounds after today. And a White Sox chance to get back over the 500 mark for the first time in quite a little bit. We'll take you back to when that was. And as we mentioned, chance for them to get back on the right side of the win-loss column here as they approach the All-Star break. Also this, Sox fans, come out to Specialty Beer Night Tuesday, June 28th. This year's event is located in the patio area. The $45 ticket package includes access to the tasting from 5:40 p.m. till 7:30 p.m., complimentary food in the patio, and an outfield reserved game ticket. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/specialty. We'll hear from Robin Ventura coming up next. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
The Sox host the Blue Jays. First pitch at 1:10.
On your home for White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We got you up until about 12:30 or so. We'll hit the news and then start the pregame show for the White Sox and Blue Jays here at U.S. Cellular Field. It is a gorgeous day at the ballpark. Bring the sunscreen, though. Bring the little ones as well. But bring the sunscreen. It's hot. It's nice. It's a great day to watch some baseball here on the South Side. Sox going for their 38th win of the season. They will be, with a win, it will be the first time over 500 since they beat the Royals back on June 10th. That was a 7-5 victory that afternoon, or that evening, I should say. That was the second win in a row for the White Sox. They got the win that night on the behind Chris Sale. He went six innings. It was one of the rougher ones for Sale this season. Despite the win, his 10th of the year, he went six innings, gave up five earned, 11 hits. He struck out eight, gave up the three home runs. Remember, Eric Hosmer took him deep twice in that ballgame. First time anyone had taken Chris Sale deep twice in a ballgame since Ryan Rayburn all the way back in the day. Sox fans, you can visit the contest page at WLSAM.com and register for a chance to win a scholarship to an official youth baseball, fast pitch softball, or basketball summer camp of the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Bulls. That's all courtesy of the Bulls Sox Academies. You know, we have Michael Huff on all the time. He is one of the directors of the Bulls Sox Academy on the baseball side, former White Sox outfielder. We've had him on a number of times talking a little baseball and about the youth aspect of baseball, too. They do an excellent job there at the Bulls Sox Academy. It's fun for everybody. And the cool part is they get everybody involved. And we've talked with Michael about it, too. In this day and age, youth baseball can be so, it can get so specialized and so focused on, you know, traveling and the pressures of it. Because we're in this kind of baseball atmosphere where the pressure can get hyped. I mean, you look at a guy like Zach Collins, who's out here today and making his debut at the ballpark. There's no doubt that he came up in pressure-packed environments as far back as when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12. Michael likes to talk about, and the Bulls Sox Academy likes to talk about too, making sure that everybody's having, you know, fun out there and enjoying the game and learning how to do it the right way so that you're both, you know, good at it and that you're safe while you're doing it. So head over to WLSAM.com, register for your chance to win a scholarship. It's awesome stuff. I know the Big John Howell Show has been giving away a handful of those. The Steve Dahl Show has too. We want to get you out there. We want to get the kids out there and involved in baseball, fast pitch softball, or basketball, if that's your thing, too. That's the contest pitch, WLSAM.com. We mentioned, too, Alex Avila is in the lineup, as is Deonner Navarro this afternoon against the Blue Jays. Robin Ventura talking about his decision a little bit earlier with the media to have both catchers in the lineup. Avila is going to DH. Navarro is going to do the catching. Here's Robin.
Yeah, you like the way he's swinging it. I've done it on occasion, so just like the way it's swinging, it's been there.
It gives you another lefty bat. Is it something you consider doing some more here?
Early, we thought of doing it, and then Alex got hurt, and you know, at that time, you're thinking you can just have an obby catch, but you know, I think the way Alex is swinging it right now, day game after night game, you can have an obby catch. Alex still DH and keep swinging.
What's the change you've seen in his offensive game so far, Alex?
It's just, you know, I think just the timing of it, the rhythm is right there, and when he makes contact, it sounds hard. Like there's just a different sound coming off his bat right now. You know, I even mentioned it last night, I think he hit a foul ball somewhere, but just the impact, you can tell he's right on stuff. You know, balance and everything else. So, you know, that injury probably takes a while for him to get back and get that rhythm back and that good feel back.
That's Robin on Alex Avila and Deonner Navarro both being in the lineup tonight. As we talked about, Avila's numbers in June, very good, hitting over 300 and on base up there around four. Some good numbers for him. he's in the lineup. So is DeHonor. Jose Abreu is back in the lineup tonight. Todd Frazier shifts back over to the more natural position at third base. Well, he looked good at first last night. Made that diving play at first in the sixth inning. Carlos Rodon able to locate the bag at first. It was going to be, you know, your 3-1 putout. Rodon just had a tough time finding the bag. A diving play at first, and the slide beat him out. It's kind of one of the weird, just kind of a weird situation out there. But Frazier made a heck of a play going to his right, making the dive to corral that baseball in the first place. Anyway, Abreu's back in. He's had a lot of success against R.A. Dickey, who's going to start for the Blue Jays today. He's hitting .417 against him in 12 at-bats. Three home runs, too, in the five hits that he's got. 5 for 12. With three round trippers, that's certainly a solid measure of success against anybody. Knuckleballers especially. I mean, they just be weird. And it's kind of weird, too, that just in a handful of days, the White Sox are going to face two of the I believe it's the only two starters that I can think of in the American League that throw primarily the knuckleball. Steven Wright. From the Red Sox, who leads the American League in ERA, faced him just a handful of days ago. Wright's got a 2.01 ERA, and out there in front of guys like Rich Hill and Michael Fulmer of the Tigers and Danny Salazar of the Indians, it's going to be two in a very short period of time. R.A. Dickey now and Steven Wright just a handful of days ago, knuckleballers that the White Sox will see. Get yourself out tomorrow at 1:10. As the White Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays, the first 5,000 girls ages 12 and under will receive a doll-sized White Sox T-shirt presented by American Girl. For tickets, call 866-SOX-GAME or visit whitesox.com. The relievers have had to work of late. White Sox playing a handful of close games, whether that's a couple of 3-1 finals against the Red Sox or an 8-6 ball game or a 10-9 ball game. I mean, there have been nights where the offense has come alive and either come up short or just won. Close ball games throughout, regardless of how many runs are getting scored. But what that means is that you've got high leverage situations that relievers have to get into. And the White Sox have had to trust a couple of guys that wouldn't ordinarily be first up in some of those high-pressure situations, both out of need and both out of a little bit of trust, too. I mean, a guy like Michael Lanoa comes up with the pedigree he has, spent a lot of time in the minor leagues, is a very highly ranked and very highly sought-after free agent when he was signed by the Oakland Athletics about 6 years ago. Kid comes up, very tall, good stuff, breaking ball that needs probably a little bit of refinement, but looks like it's going to get there. Michael Lanoa pitching some high-leverage places. Chris Beck, just up out of AAA, pitched in a high-leverage spot against the Red Sox a handful of days ago. Guys have been used, and when David Robertson has been tapped, you know, you go back to, tapped to be used, you go back to a bad outing, a horrible outing against the Royals, where he just couldn't record it, given a 6-run lead, and gives that up. He's been tough ever since. And whether it's been outings where there is a little bit of high drama, whether it's a situation where he's 1-2-3 and nails all the way through the ninth and gets you that save, he's been out there and able to do it. Robertson notched his 100th save last night, 100th save in his career, 53rd for the White Sox. Robin Ventura talked a little bit about his closer this afternoon with the media.
You're able to be a closer for that long, for one. I mean, it's a hard job. It's nightly test, and it's pass or fail every time you're out there. So it's a high-stress position that I think guys that are able to do it, hit numbers like that, are very unique. And somebody that has a unique pitch and he's able to do that and get through it, get in jams, get out of jams. It doesn't always happen, but I think you're talking about a guy that can come back and wipe it out the next day and get back after it.
That kind of last night, when you look at how that went and for him to get out, and is that kind of illustrate the job right there?
Yeah, at the end, it's going to be whether he got it done or not. Last night he got it done. It's not the situation that he wants to get in, but you have to be able to have the stuff to get out of it, and he has that.
That's Robin talking about David Robertson, who's been in this league for a while, learned at the right hand of one of the best, Mariano Rivera, when he was with the Yankees, when Robbie was with the Yankees and setting up for Mo. Took over the year after Mo had retired and did a wonderful job there in New York. signed here a couple of years ago and has been very good for the White Sox, and hopefully that continues all throughout the season as the Sox get back into a very tight AL Central race here in the middle of June. 312-591-8900, the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Still a minute or two to get you in if you'd like to talk a little White Sox baseball. Coming up in the pregame show, we're going to have an interview with Zach Collins, the White Sox first-round draft pick, 10th overall, catcher out of Miami. Rachel Brady, our White Sox reporter here at WLS, sat down with him. So we'll bring you his thoughts on being here at the ballpark and hitting out of the cage at U.S. Cellular Field for the very first time. There were some jitters, a lot of excitement, some butterflies, and best of all, a couple of dingers, too. Collins got a couple out of the ballpark, which was really cool to see. Talking with, and he's not the only guy who's a draft pick who's being thrown into the system here. Zach Birdie, who was the second overall pick for the White Sox, second pick by the White Sox, 26th overall, a supplemental pick in the first round. He threw at Winston-Salem on Friday night. He had already pitched at the Arizona White Sox League, jumped to high A. Not a great outing for Zach, but he's there. He's throwing about 100 or so. Gave up a couple of runs, or one run on three hits, one inning of work. But he's a guy who, I got told this, he's a guy, don't rent long-term. Don't buy anything. You're going to be moving a lot, hopefully this season. His final address is here at the ballpark, as it is for all the guys that they drafted this year. White Sox and Blue Jays coming up in just a little bit. That does it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks so much for listening. We've got the pregame show starting in just a couple of minutes. News is next. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly. And listen to White Sox baseball right here. WLS AM 890.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
The only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out, is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. Happy Sunday morning to you. We're going to keep you into the afternoon as we lead up to the White Sox and Blue Jays here for Game 3 of a three-game set. Yesterday, a crazy ball game. A lot of history, and unfortunately, the White Sox on the losing end of it. But a crazy thing, and you don't see seven home runs in a game all that often. So we'll talk a little bit about that here to open the show. We'll hear from Adam Eaton on the show today. We'll hear from the manager, Robin Ventura. Going to talk to Phil Rogers of MLB.com about 11:15 or so. This is the time of the year when teams are starting to get set, figure out what they want to do for the rest of the season as to, you know, whether they become buyers or sellers, stay putters as well, boring teams, I like to call those. And we'll get the scope of the National League and the American League as well, and how it all kind of relates to the White Sox, of course, as it is White Sox Weekly. We'll talk to Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com. He's going to stop by the booth about noon or so. We're out here at U.S. Cellular Field. It's a nice day. It's hot. It's a little muggy. All right, let's be honest. It's muggy. It's a little bit humid, but we're all persevering. It's a good day for a ball game. Hopefully we don't get any precipitation whatsoever, and it's just kind of a muggy thing out here today. Chris Sale on the bump too, and that's great news for the White Sox. We'll get into some of the bullpen usage and some of the ways that these guys have just been worked over the last handful of ball games. Something to look out for as the White Sox get a Chris Sale start at once again the right time in a stretch of games, and then an off day tomorrow before they're here to face the Twins starting on Tuesday. We mentioned we're going to talk to Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com. I actually had a chat with Robin Ventura a little earlier here during the homestand, and he and I talked about the five-man infield, its usage, what he's thinking about when you have to run it out there. It's certainly an odd situation when you do have to get it out there, but I love when managers are willing to use it and play the numbers in their favor and aren't afraid to try and win a ball game. You know, we talk all the time, we talk a lot, rather, about, you know, managers emptying the bench in search of that one run in the bottom of an inning to try and win it at home, or, you know, kind of damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead, go out and win the ball game in front of you. And I think offensively, managers do that fairly often. I think defensively, they're more reticent to do so, although that's changing some in the landscape of this game. And Robin Ventura running the five-man infield out there a number of different occasions. It was successful, the five-man infield. It just, in one game, at least against the Boston Red Sox, it just didn't pay off as they were able to drive a run across eventually. Still, five-man infield's kind of cool. We'll talk to Robin about that as well. In yesterday's ball game, though, and this is what we're all talking about here, in a game where, you know, you make a little major league history, you certainly set or tie franchise records. It's worth chatting about a little bit. It's the first time the White Sox have hit 7 home runs since they set the franchise record of 7 home runs since 1955 versus the Kansas City Athletics. That's how far back you have to go. The team that was in Kansas City isn't even in Kansas City anymore. 29-6 was the final as the White Sox beat the A's. They hit 3 solo shots that day, 2 3-run home runs and 2 2-run home runs. Of course, the crazy part about yesterday is that they were 7 solo shots. They are the third team in Major League history to drop a game where they hit 7 home runs in Major League history. Weirdly enough, the Tigers are the only other team to do it. They did it twice. In 2004, they lost 11-9 versus the Red Sox while hitting 7 home runs. Going back through the names, it's actually kind of fun. Ivan Rodriguez hit 2. Craig Monroe hit 1. Eric Munson hit 2. Carlos Pena hit 1. And Dimitri Young hit 1 as well. The first time, that this has happened in Major League history where a team hit 7 home runs and lost was 1995. The Tigers lost 14-12 to the White Sox, actually. 4 home runs were hit off James Baldwin. Chad Curtis hit 2. Cecil Fielder hit 2. Kirk Gibson hit 2 home runs in that ballgame. Rob Dibble gave up 1. Kirk McCaskill gave up the other. Lou Whitaker hit a home run off Scott Radinsky. That was the 7 home runs for the Tigers that day against the White Sox. But the Sox won it 14-12. 5 home runs for the Whites. That would have been a fun ball game to be at. 12 home runs. Ray Durham hit 1. Ron Karkovice hit 2. Craig Grebeck hit 1. And Frank Thomas hit 1 as well in 1995 against the Tigers. Now, certainly, when you're searching for offense and trying to get it done, you hit 7 home runs, and there's kind of this bittersweet knowledge that, yeah, we tapped R.A. Dickey. We got to the rest of this Blue Jays bullpen and were able to scare them some, but we just couldn't quite hold it on our end. Adam Eaton speaking a little bit after the ball game, he got one of the home runs yesterday, and I suppose kind of summed up where his head and most of the White Sox heads were at after a ball game like that. You drop one 10-8, you know that you accomplished as much as you possibly could offensively, really, when it comes down to it. In a comeback effort, as Miguel Gonzalez wasn't able to hold the Blue Jays down early, you know, down 8-0 early on in this ball game, and all of a sudden you're back in it. The tying runs at the plate in the ninth. You give yourself a chance to win, like this offense has almost all season long. Adam talked a little bit about what it was like to be on that White Sox club, knowing that you were clubbing the baseball around a little bit, but unable to get the win. Here's Eaton after the ball game last night.
So you had 7 home runs in a game and kind of go, wow, how do we lose it?
Well, they got a well-oiled machine over there offensively. You know, they're tough to compete with, and but at the same time, yeah, 7 homers, you think you'd win the ball game, but it's kind of how baseball goes. Baseball's a weird game. You know, the conversations we always have is it's a tricky game. You can never really predict it. So, you know, tough loss, but we know we won yesterday, and hopefully can take the series tomorrow. We've been playing some really good baseball the last week or so, you know, with Boston, and now coming in here with a good opponent like Toronto. So hopefully we can continue to do that. We have what's a Stroman going tomorrow. You know, guy competes his butt off, so I'm looking forward till tomorrow and winning the series.
Certain times of the year, a manager and his staff have to just hold back on bullpen guys who are worn out for, you know, just take care of them. Today, seemed to be one of those games where you just had to back off with some guys.
Yes and no. I think Mig settled down quite nicely after the first inning or so. And his pitch count was low. With as much as many runs that were scored, his pitch count was still pretty low. So I think he handled the whole situation really well. And the young guys, there's no time to really relax. You know, we want to win this thing. So you got to throw guys in some situations that, you know, may not be real comfortable with, but they'll get comfortable. And Beck came in through pretty well. Some of the young guys, like I said, come in and are throwing some really very big innings for us, and they're going to need those innings to be productive in September when we're really making a run for this thing. So I think it's a good thing for sure.
Yeah, this is one of those games where offensively you guys knew what the conditions were. If you could get it up, you could get it out of the ballpark.
You didn't think my homer was a real homer? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're underlying? Not really, to be honest with you. Not really. I think we hit some balls really well today, and they just happened to carry out, to be honest with you. I think if you look at the past couple games, you know, we don't hit that many balls in the air, and we did today. And like I said, I think it wasn't because we were trying to or we thought the conditions. I think that's when you get in some trouble. You know, windy day, and you want to try to, you know, lift and separate, and you have four punches, and you don't know what happens. So I think guys just kept with their approach and hit some balls really well today. You know, with a knuckleballer, that's kind of all right. You know, he lives and dies by that, you know. So I think, it's like I said, we took advantage of.
That's Adam Eaton after the ball game last night. Obviously kind of a crazy one. Seven home runs and you take the loss. You certainly understand or like to see the power displayed by this ball club. Hopefully that's something they could throw. I mean, listen, if you could hit seven home runs again today, I think you'd absolutely take it, right? You hopefully get out there and run the numbers up again. We'll go through some of the numbers in June for the White Sox as the offense is starting to find a little bit of traction here in the last 15 days or so. Alex Avila coming on strong, Eaton, Melky, and Jose Abreu all performing really well over the last handful of ball games too. The bullpen usage is something that's, you know, they've had to be called on. You heard Adam talk about it. They've had to go to some of the younger guys. And what you hope, first and foremost, is that, like he said, when it comes to August, September, you know, late in games where you do have to trust guys other than Jones, Robertson, you know, the big guys in that bullpen, that you've got experience on some of those younger kids, and that pays off later on down the road. Phil Rogers, MLB.com, going to join us on the other side of a quick break. But if you want to bring your little all-star closer to the game, fans 13 and under can join the White Sox Kids Club for a special Kids Club giveaways, free White Sox tickets, and exclusive events. Just go to whitesox.com/kidsclub today to join. I'm Connor McKnight. We'll talk to Phil Rogers on the other side. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox lay here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're going to take your phone calls a little bit later on in the morning / afternoon. We're taking you up to the pregame show for the White Sox and Blue Jays. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. Right now, though, we're heading out to the phone lines, and it's Phil Rogers, MLB.com, hanging out with us for a little while. Hi, Phil.
How you doing, Connor? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I feel like the last couple of times we've talked, we've been sitting at a desk and hanging out with David Kaplan and staring at a TV cameras. I think this is nicer. This is better.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. We can do it without Cap's gaudy socks.
The socks. I mean, it's all you can stare at when you're on the television set. It really is. Phil, wanted to ask you, as we get into, you know, June is closing up faster than we could imagine. July's going to start. We're past all of the Super 2 deadline stuff. We're past all of the roster settings and figuring things out. I don't know if the big injuries necessarily, you never know when those are going to pop up for ball clubs, but I think by and large, these buyers and sellers are really starting to gel at this point. And, you know, the National League and American League kind of stand in contrast to each other as to how many of which kind there are. As you look around all of baseball and try and figure out exactly who's going to be on the move the fastest, or who needs to make a decision as to who needs to go first. Are the teams toward the bottom in the National League guys that we knew were going to be sellers the ones that come to mind first?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty much still uncertain. I mean, you look at the Yankees, all the talk about Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman. They're still basically, there, and it's tough for ownership. The White Sox are a perfect example. If you look at the decision they made a year ago, many times, in the last, post 2008, it seems like, they've been reluctant to give it up at the trade deadline, and they continue, hoping for the best case scenario. And I think that's the more likely position teams will take. And if you look in the American League right now, you've got the White Sox are 3.5 out in the wild card. That's right. The good news. The bad news is they're in eighth place in the wild card. So yeah, there's just such a jumble of those teams there. And, it's still a long time between now and August 1st. I think things will more or less define themselves as we get there. But there aren't a lot of players available right now when you talk about, this team might add this part, this team might add that part. There aren't many sellers. Oakland's an example of that. You look at them, they are not in that 3.5 back mix. I believe they're 8 back in the wild card. And,
right,
the people I'm talking to are saying that Oakland is not looking to move its players yet. I think they will, but nobody knows exactly when. Early July, Oakland has had a history in early July. They've made trades. That was when they made the trade a couple years back with the Cubs to Marja and Hamill. That was when they made the trade with the Cubs in 2008, where the Cubs picked up Rich Harden going the other way. So I think once we get past July 4th, maybe we'll start seeing some action.
Do you think that at this point, teams are, with the extra wild card now added in, talk with Phil Rogers, MLB.com, with the extra wild card added in, do teams make, if they're just there for the wild card and not exactly in their division race, do they kind of hedge with the size of move they make, or does that not necessarily play in as much as you might think?
I think intellectually you think they will hedge, and that, you're only going to get a wild card, the one game playoff. How aggressive should you really be? But teams, still go from the wild card to the World Series. So I think it tends to make teams being very aggressive to kind of salvage the season to try to get that wild card spot. And there is no question in my mind when you get to these mid-season trades, they favor the sellers over the buyers by a large percentage. I would say it's like 3-1, in terms of the trades that work out better for the teams that move veterans and pick up young players. And so it's sometimes pie in the sky for the buyers to think that they're going to be able to make a move or two and get great improvement. But I think ownership across the board is competitive. Front offices are competitive, and they really, really want to find the tweak or two that will fix them and make them better. But most of the time, the things that make the difference are roster parts that are there all year. And I would put up Jose Abreu as an example. The White Sox weren't going anywhere with the Jose Abreu of the first couple of months of the season.
Sure.
But now you look up and he's Jose Abreu again. He's got a 963 OPS in June. Melky Cabrera hitting the ball, Adam Eaton hitting the ball. I think Tim Anderson has given him a lift. The thing that's happened with the White Sox in June, now Sale and Quintana haven't really been the Sale and Quintana from early in the year. And so you keep spinning your wheels for other reasons. But if you get Sale and Quintana pointed in the right direction, and I think that's had more of an impact than James Shields' really hard-to-watch struggles. If Sale and Quintana, I think between the two of them, they have a 5.02 ERA in June. And, that's going to get fixed. I mean, these are guys that are going to pitch
right.
better than they have been in this stretch. You get that fixed with the lineups turned around, Jose Abreu being Jose Abreu, and then you start to have the team that, you know, Rick Hahn and the front office thought in March they would have in the middle of the summer.
Talking with Phil Rogers here, MLB.com on White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890. You mentioned Tim Anderson at the top of this lineup for the White Sox, and I don't know that he's necessarily your archetypical leadoff guy. He certainly likes to swing it a lot. He makes a good amount of contact, however, and he's made a lot of hard contact up in the bigs, a couple of doubles, a couple of triples, a couple of balls, even, you know, singles that maybe you stretch into doubles if you're in the stretching mood. He's been impressive in some ways, and obviously there are some areas to grow, too, for any rookie. Do you think that putting him in the leadoff spot lets him grow some, lets him accept a different kind of challenge than other rookies might have coming up into that into this club?
Yeah, and I mean, if you looked at his the minor league record too, he was the top of the order guy always. Mm-hmm. So when he came up and he hit at the bottom of the White Sox order for a very short amount of time, I didn't think that would continue. And I like the Anderson Eaton mix at the top. You know, having two guys that can potentially do things, and just the athleticism. You know, I mean, he just the speed. He's scoring runs. He does look like he can be pitched to at times, and you'd like to see him develop a little more plate discipline and pitch recognition. You think those things
sure.
will come though as he settles in, but that. You know, I like the presence at the top of the order. You know, this feeling he's always going to be able to score from first on a double once he's on. And, you know, the pitchers are going to have to pay attention to him when he's on base. So maybe he makes the pitcher makes a mistake because he's worried about the stolen base. I mean, those traditional leadoff skills, I think Anderson does have them. And I think he has made the White Sox better. I mean, you know, he didn't fix the White Sox, but I think when they got him, they had lost 12 of 15. They were in a real spiral when they called him up, and they've basically treaded water since then. They haven't gotten on the hot streak to make up for that 3-12 stretch, but they stopped losing games and started, you know, being much more competitive.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, as you take a look at the AL Central here in Cleveland on the run that they're on, they've won their last eight of their last 10, of course. That's how that math works out. 43-30 now are the Cleveland Indians and hold a 5-game lead on Kansas City in the AL Central. Cleveland's a team of relatively limited resources cash-wise, but a decent, I guess, farm system. They have some pieces they might be able to use to make acquisitions. Do you get the sense that Cleveland's willing to add a little offense to that mix, or are they kind of in a let the roster do what it's going to do to win a division?
I think they will be active, but I don't expect them to make any blockbuster trades. Mm-hmm. You know, their whole front office pattern is conservative. And it is financial. I mean, there's no question. I mean, their attendance is a big issue for them. But basically, they don't really have to. I mean, the job they've gotten in the rotation from Josh Tomlin, Trevor Bauer, the guys that weren't necessarily put in with their big three, and Danny Salazar has emerged as, you know, maybe being the number one in the rotation with, you know, a couple other good guys in Kluber and Carrasco, and they in a way are the team the White Sox hoped that they could be, that they would get their rotation clicking 4 or 5 strong, you know, every time through the rotation and be able to win a lot of games, 4-3, 5-4, 3-2, and not set out to overpower the world, but just have enough offense to support the rotation, and you know, Cleveland has been doing that very well. Right now, they're actually on target to win 95 games if you just project their winning percentage.
Right,
and I think they are making a myth of the thought that you could win the Central with 87, 88, 89 wins. They are a formidable team, and I think. They could, you know, I mean, they will make it difficult for anybody else to win the Central. And I, you know, I don't look at them now and think they're going to fall apart and somebody's going to win the Central at 87 wins.
Phil, appreciate you hopping on. Always good talking baseball with you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Connor.
You got it. Phil Rogers, MLB.com, hopping on, talking a little baseball on White Sox Weekly. We're a little late, and here's the news. Coming up next, we'll hear from Robin Ventura.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Got you for another hour or so. We're heading up to the pregame show between the White Sox and Blue Jays here. It's a rubber match. White Sox won the first. Blue Jays took the second. Yesterday was kind of a crazy ball game. 10-8, seven home runs for the White Sox despite a loss in that ball game. 37-38 the record, looking to get back to 500. Sox took the first game of this series 3-2. Nice ball game by Melky Cabrera in that one. 3-for-4, a home run, a double, and a single in that game, and the RBI on the home run. And really, this offense has had a couple of guys starting to click in the month of June. And while the team numbers are mostly in the middle third in the month of June, we're just talking the month of June here, in the last 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks or so of baseball, there's a little bit, you can see traction from the White Sox offense, I think. We'll talk about the bullpen, the starting rotation, and how the two have affected each other some. We'll hear from Robin Ventura about the way he's had to use some relievers. Obviously, the injury to Zach Putnam kind of puts you a little bit behind the eight ball. Michael Ynoa has availed himself fairly well. Rough day yesterday. Rookie's going to have that at some point. You know, you're not going to get scoreless outings every time out from any reliever, and the guy's pitching for the first time in the bigs this season. But I think by and large, you can see the makings of a guy, and Don Cooper's talked about this a number of times on pregame shows past. Michael Ynoa is a guy you can see some meaningful innings coming from, given the stuff he's got, the command he's able to offer with the fastball. He's got some good stuff that plays fairly well. So I think being able to hand him innings and get him some work, some experience in some of that late stuff, and yeah, even as much as you don't want it to happen, but you know, failing is a huge part of this game, and understanding how to deal with it and correct it and come back from it, obviously a big thing too. And hopefully you get some of those bumps out of the way now. And like Adam Eaton was talking about earlier in the show, you're able to overcome that kind of issue later in September, in August and September, when Adam said, you know, the team obviously expects to be chasing down somebody at the top of this AL Central, whether that's the Indians, Tigers, or Royals. Indians are certainly up there now and look like they're, they don't look like they want to give anything back, but we'll see. It's a long baseball season. Family Sundays are presented by Coca-Cola at U.S. Cellular Field. They feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level, $15 in the lower level, special kid-focused activities throughout the ballpark, plus parking is available for only $10. Visit whitesox.com/Sundays to purchase your ticket today. We've got such a Sunday right now at the ballpark. Gates will open in just a little bit. White Sox and Blue Jays in a 1-10 start here. Chris Sale on the hill against Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays. Mentioned some of the offensive comebacks for some players in this White Sox lineup. Alex Avila hitting yesterday as the DH, both catchers in the lineup for yesterday's ballgame. And it seemed to pay off for the White Sox. Deonner Navarro and Adam Eaton both contributing offensively in a ballgame where there were a lot of contributions offensively. Navarro 1-for-4 with the home run. He hit the second home run of the game. He was the meat of the Brett Laurie, J.B. Shuck bread in the back-to-back-to-back home runs in the second inning. Alex Avila 2-for-4, a home run and a double. Avila's hit real well in June in 51 plate appearances. Here's the slash line. I know it's a lot of numbers, but you got to be impressed by the performance. A .333 average, .412 on base, and a .578 slugging. He's hit three home runs, albeit three of those in three different games, two against the Royals in one game and one yesterday. Adam Eaton has cooked a little bit in June after a somewhat tepid May. .292 the average, .379 the on base. You'll love that out of the two spot in the lineup. .449 the slugging, three triples, five doubles. He leads Major League Baseball in triples. 104 plate appearances for Adam Eaton. Avila obviously splitting time, so the plate appearances are about half. Eaton in the two spot and obviously playing every day is going to get a handful, many more plate appearances. Melky Cabrera hitting it pretty well lately, too. 311 the average, 325 the on-base. He's got four home runs, eight doubles, too, in 81 plate appearances. And Jose Abreu really is kind of where this, you see some of this traction hopefully taking hold. Obviously, you'd like to get, you know, the numbers for Melky Cabrera are nice in the month of June. Had a little bit of a, I suppose, a mini slump. Had games where it was weird. He'd have a game where the production was there and the focal point of that offense. Obviously, he missed three in May, being on the family emergency leave list, and then would have a couple where he just couldn't quite find his eye at the plate or whatever it happened to be. But Jose Abreu has really taken off in June and become the guy, the Jose Abreu that you saw in his first two seasons, a 325 average, 372 on base, and the power is really coming back. It's a 963 OPS in June, five home runs, and just under 100 plate appearances, 94 to be exact. It's been nice to see him come back and slug and hit and have the approach, I think, more so than anything else that you're used to seeing Jose Abreu have. There have been, and it, I don't know why, but in the Boston series, it maybe struck me more than in any other series so far in June or even the last couple of days. Out in Boston, you know, the book on Jose is if throw him inside with the hard stuff, maybe he swings at it and fouls it off. Maybe you get him to swing and miss a little bit, but get him inside and try and work him there. Jose is back to feeling the zone quite a bit more, it seems. He's taking pitches on the inner half, whereas in the first 2 months of the season, he seemed to be swinging at a lot that was inside and off the plate as well. And whether he was jamming himself or swinging and missing, the results weren't good when he was kind of opening up the strike zone inside on himself. Now that he's kind of re-understood, I suppose, or just gone back to the guy he is, especially on the inner half of the plate, he's taking more pitches there. He's understanding what he's able to do with pitches on the inner half some, and he's making you pay when you miss. And that's obviously what a lot of sluggers have done over the course of their career. Sure, throw it inside. Throw it high and inside and throw it low and away with the breaking stuff. That's, you know, tale as old as time in Major League Baseball. But if you throw inside and you miss back out over the plate, sluggers hurt you. And they hurt you to the tune of, you know, 400-foot home runs. And we've seen a couple of those for Jose Abreu in the last month. This White Sox offense hopefully starting to find some traction. And with the Junes that we mentioned, Avila, Eaton, Melky, and Jose Abreu are having, hopefully the wins and losses start coming, or the wins, rather, start coming for the White Sox as we close out this month and head to July. You can visit the contest page at WLSAM.com and register for your chance to win a scholarship to an official youth baseball, fast-pitch softball, or basketball summer camp of the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Bulls, courtesy of the Bulls Sox Academy. All you got to do is go to WLSAM.com and register. We come back. I had a conversation with Robin Ventura about the five-man infield. It's a fascination for me. I hope you're interested in it as well. We talked a little X's and O's with the White Sox manager. That's coming up next on White Sox Weekly. You've got WLS AM 890.
The Sox host the Blue Jays. First pitch at 1:10.
On your home for White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. This is WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're leading you up into the pregame show. 12:35 is when the pregame show begins. Ed and DJ will take it right about 1 o'clock as the White Sox get the Blue Jays for game 3 of this three-game series. It's a rubber match, and Chris Sale and Marcus Stroman are on the hill this afternoon. Had a chance to sit down with Robin Ventura the other day. I can't remember. It was the first day of the series, right when they came back home. Well, had some questions about the five-man infield, just kind of the process, how you use it, when you want to use it, and what the dugout conversation is like to go to a five-man infield. Talked earlier in the show about how managers seem to be more willing to go win the ball game, you know, do everything it takes offensively, defensively. It seems like as it's slowly changing, but there's more reticent to go to, you know, big sweeping change that might give you a better chance to win when your back's up against the wall. And that's it's what we're talking about here. You know, you use a five-man infield when you're in that kind of situation. You'll hear Robin mention you don't want to use this, have to use this kind of thing. But if you've got the ability to use it and it's the best way to win a ball game, you go to it. So I sat down with Robin a little bit 2 days ago, talked about the five-man infield, and thought we'd bring it to you here.
Spend a little time talking X's and O's, a little strategy with White Sox manager Robin Ventura here on White Sox Weekly. Robin, over the last handful of days against Boston and before, five-man infields got pulled out there a couple of times. Wondered, you know, the situation kind of dictates those things, but I wonder, for you pulling the trigger on that, how easy a decision is that to make? How quickly do you know that you're going to go to it? And what's the process of employing one?
Well, I mean, you're looking at the innings developing, and, you know, it's never, nobody ever wants to do it or likes to do it. I mean, you're put in a position that, you know, any little thing through the infield, you lose. And depending on the pitcher, I mean, you want a guy that can get a ground ball against a certain hitter, and it might not even look that way numbers-wise, but just how the guy's throwing, how the other guy's swinging. With Dookie coming in the other night, I mean, you're basically hoping that Pedroia is going to hit something on the ground. And it also puts the hitter in a different mindset, too. He knows he's got to get it in the air. So you're really grasping at straws to be able to kind of come up with something. So if you just throw something a little bit different at him, you're hoping that it works.
Is that with Tyler sitting on the bench like he is and able to play any, you know, position in the infield, Is there a thought that he can go to the outfield if you need it in a game like that, as opposed to taking him out again? Can he play out there?
He can play out there, but at that point you want the best guy. I mean, you'd kick yourself if all of a sudden the ball falls in and you'd had an outfielder. You know, I think when we put Coates in there, he is a better defender than Sal would be, having not been out there. So, you know, you're spending the bench just to try and make sure that you get another chance to bat, and you just don't want to leave it out there. So, it's not a tough call in some ways, just because you're at the end of the rope and you're looking for something to hopefully have it. And then the other night, I mean, you know, it hits it to Sal, and then he bounces it home, which, you know, doesn't look all that good because he's such a good defender.
But hell of a play by Avila.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad he's played some first base in his time. But, you know, again, you're just making sure that there's not that little bounder that goes up the middle that you kind of see all the time, especially when you get to that spot. But, you know, I kind of knew that was going to happen. I mean, we did it in Cleveland, which, you know, makes it easier that you can do it later. But, you know, for Sal, he's pretty versatile in where you can put him. And I think that's the biggest thing, is you get a guy that you can insert in there and know that you have a chance. You could technically turn two if you really wanted to, but you're just hoping to get one, and then you go from there and see where you end up. But I just like the idea of changing the hitter's mind of, you know, maybe they're trying to do something different, and you end up getting the ground ball, which we did the other night, and it ended up working out for us.
Talking with Tyler, it kind of sounds like the, you know, the strategy of it is maybe a little simpler than it even looks, you know, from upstairs. You know, we see, or on the TV, and we see five men in the infield, and you go, oh, my God, it's something different. For Tyler, you know, I asked him, you know, what's your thought process? Go home, you know, you're throwing home.
Well, that's the biggest thing, is you don't want guys confused out there when you do it. So you're trying to make it simple. If you made if it's hit hard, you're going to turn two, and if you're not, but it's going to be a hard double play because he is going to be backing up. He's not going to get anything on the throw. So if you don't do it perfectly, you lose. And you have to make sure he knows, and even in that play, he was taking his time, probably too much.
Sure.
You know, it's like a hard hit ground ball that the guy that when it's hit hard, he's has a hard time throwing to first, and when he's reacting, he's great. It, you know, throws always online, but he had plenty of time on that one. I mean, it ended up working out for us, but I don't want to ever use it again, but I'm not afraid to use it.
Do you put Tyler or whomever that rover ends up being? Does that guy just go to where you need the ball to get hit? Like you said, I mean, the situation is a desperate one when you're in that spot. Or are there reliable numbers as to, you know, batter-pitcher matchups where that guy needs to go?
Well, it's similar to when we shift. I mean, there are numbers that go with it. You know, it could be the batter and hitter. It could just be the pitcher. You know, as far as he's a ground ball pitcher. And I think Dookie he can get some ground balls, and I think that's part of the logic back when we had it in Boston, is that you're hoping that there's a ground ball hit, you know, somewhere in the infield. But you also have your two better arms in the outfield with Eaton and Melky to get under it in case, you know, something's there. And I think even in Boston, it's unique just because left field's so short,
yeah,
that you can, you don't necessarily have to be right down the line. You can kind of put them, you know, both in left center and right center, and you know, feel like you have somewhat of it covered.
Robin, appreciate it as always.
Feel like it'd be cool to be in that dugout as kind of the decisions are being made there, because they, you know, there's so much more going on than just kind of what you're seeing in a ball game, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. There are, you know, other things that you've got to manage along with, and I don't mean just the X's and O's of skippering a ball club. There's more to it than that, and I thought it'd be an interesting conversation. Hope you enjoyed it. That's Robin Ventura talking a little about five-man infields there. Calling all deadheads, the White Sox invite you out to U.S. Cellular Field on Tuesday, July 5th, as we pay tribute to the Grateful Dead. With the purchase of your Grateful Dead Tribute Night ticket, you'll receive a specially designed White Sox Grateful Dead t-shirt. To purchase this special package, visit whitesox.com/gratefuldead. We come back after the noon news. Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago is going to join us here in the booth. We'll talk a little bit about the White Sox and their month of June and what it sets up for here in the month of July. It's closing in on us faster than I thought it'd get here, that's for sure. Just seems like every day flies by when you're out here at the ballpark. I'd encourage you to come join us. It's a nice day out here, rubber match too, and a Chris Sale start, so you can't go wrong. Set your Chris Sale K counters if you're not coming to the ballpark. We'll tell you where to set those a little bit later on in the show. Right now, though, head off to the news. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890 and the Sox Radio Network.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
The only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, presented by Miller Lite, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. However you'd like to play it, I'm Connor McKnight. You've got WLS AM 890. Sox and Blue Jays coming up here in about half an hour. We'll start the pregame show. Ed and DJ will have it right at 1:10. It's a Chris Sale game, so get yourself to the ballpark or set your K counters. I don't have the K counter number for it. I told you I would, and I lied to you. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. We've got Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com joining us here in the booth. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Good to talk with you. Always nice to have you on the show. We're going to do a thing, and I didn't tell you this before, so I'm completely sandbagging you. You can call the show, and if you want to have the conversation, ask Dan Hayes a question or two, we can do that. It's more difficult to call, you know, Jason and Stone when they're in the booth and broadcasting the game and you're on television. It's very difficult to have the phone call get to you, and then we can do it now, though.
That's great. And actually, in the booth, we have a phone, but it's the bat phone.
Yeah. No, you can't. Just very,
very
important.
Very
different.
Right.
Jerry calls that phone and lets Jason know. Yeah, that's it. He's doing a good job. Really, is what he calls for.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Or
limited access. I think
really
two
is.
People have that phone number.
312-591-8900. Now you have the phone number. Everybody has the phone number. We'll give out Dan Hayes' personal number a little bit later in the show. Wanted to talk to you about this because you and I were talking about it before we came on here, and I know you did some work on Twitter with it. And you and I were talking about it, I think the other day when they came back. I think when the White Sox came back here to U.S. Cellular Field to face the Blue Jays. While this team has been competitive in most ball games, and even in games where you give up 10 runs, God, you hit 7,
yeah,
you throw up 8. You know, you have come back in so many ball games. But what that does is while it boosts the offense and confidence of the hitters, you are having to tax bullpens because almost by definition, your starters aren't in there. They've given up some runs. You've had to pull them out, whether that's James Shields or Miguel. Or
right.
Even Chris Sale's had a couple of short outings here in June. The bullpen has had to work and work often. And I wonder if you can kind of talk to where what kind of strain that's put on guys. Obviously, with Zach Putnam out,
right.
It changes the dynamic.
Absolutely. I mean, Zach Putnam out indefinitely. Jacob Petrichka out for the season, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Daniel Webb was kind of the backup to those guys in case, and he's out for the season. So there are two guys that pitched, I think, 158 innings in 2014. Putnam and Petrichka were your fill-in closers down the stretch, save 21 of those 25 or 27 tries. And they're gone, and they were your fourth and fifth guys. And all of a sudden, now you have the rest. Now, yesterday, one pitcher who will remain nameless joked that I got my day off for the month the other day. I mean, it's that bad right now where, you know, we just ran those numbers in the last eight games, 30 innings by the bullpen.
Yeah.
And they've been in a lot of those games. You look at the Indians games, 3-2 losses twice. They had the one blowout in the Shields game.
Right.
And then they win 3 of 4 in Boston, but they were in all of those, and they were in yesterday's game, even though they fell behind early. So competitive games all the way. 7 of those 8 games have been competitive to the point where you just have to start throwing a Chris Beck out there, even though he's very untested. You have to throw Michael Leno out there, even though he's untested. And the funny part is by being here a week and a half, Michael Leno is more tested than Beck because he's faced Miguel Cabrera
right.
in a tight game. He's had a few tries, so you could see why they throw him in the ninth inning because he's stood up to some tests so far. But, I mean, it's just kind of – it's reminiscent of 2012 where it was all rookies that year in the bullpen. It was Addison Reed. It was Nate Jones for the first time. We saw – I think at one point they had 7 or 8 rookies in the that they used in one game. I mean, it's – you just kind of have to figure out what works on the fly. It's not the most optimal conditions for sure.
Bullpen usage, too, is one of those things where we try and find matchups. It's probably the easiest thing to second guess, I would imagine, in a ball game. Say for maybe, you know, throwing in a pinch hitter late, I guess, but bullpen usage kind of thing that's a constant throughout an entire season. And yet there's so many things about bullpen usage that a lot of people casually observing the game or from the outside looking in don't understand. You know, you have a game like yesterday, and it's not necessarily that teams want to be cloak and dagger with it. But if Robin Ventura or hell, John Gibbons comes out before the game and says, well, I don't have Roberto Osuna tonight, then Robin goes, okay, great. That's awesome.
Right. It changes the planning. It changes how maybe you plan your game.
Right.
And the fact that Robin yesterday basically had to say, well, I don't have David Robertson, Matt Albers. I don't have Zach Duke. I don't have Nate Jones. I mean, after the game, he said it. Everyone that was able to pitch, pitched. So Matt Perk was going to be out there for a long time and
yeah.
see how the White Sox come back. And that's the state right now of the bullpen. I mean, they've used them a lot. Zach Duke leads the league in appearances.
39?
Yeah. And it's we're not even at the halfway point right now. And, I mean, so you got guys who are being used a lot. And there's stuff, you know, David Robertson, the fact that he got the – you know, that was a good 5-game stretch for him right there.
Very good.
He came close on Friday blowing it, but he got through it. And he's a guy that in the past with the Yankees, the knock on him was the first 2 days it was great. The third day, stuff was a little iffy. And we saw that a little bit last season. And so for him to come through all that clean, you know, he had a close one in Boston too and got out of that.
Yeah.
But for him to get through all that unscathed, you know, that was a really good run for him. And guys, stuff isn't the same on that third day as it is. You know, the fastball is a little bit less sharp. The you know, his off-speed stuff doesn't quite have the break. And I think that that's something that, for them to get through it, that shows what they've been able to do.
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons to tip the cap to some of these guys, given how many times they've been out there. Ed talks about it a lot, too. You know, you talk about that third day out and not having quite the sharp stuff. Ed Farmer has been in that situation and knows that on those days, you're not so much throwing. You really do have to pitch. And,
right.
and I think that speaks to what this coaching staff is able to do with some of these guys and get them through some of those outings. And Coop talks about it a lot on the pregame show. You can't be a reliever and not fail in this game. There are going to be days where you get lit when you come out of the bullpen, whether it's because it's not your day, you didn't have it, or you've been used 4 days in a row. I think by and large, the ability for this pen to keep this team in as many games as it has is fairly remarkable.
Absolutely. And it was obviously the focal point of the struggles when they've gone through this run.
Clearly.
Because they were so great in April. But you look at that and you wonder, How you knew it early on. The offense wasn't pulling away from enough games.
Right.
You were playing a lot of high-leverage games. And that's one thing that, you know, the lack of depth on the position side has hurt them. And it's even more so with Austin Jackson out now. You know, you're waiting for him to come back. You're waiting for Justin Morneau. You figure the lineup's going to be a lot better when they get back. But they still could use yet another bat because you need a couple blowouts on your side. You need some four-run leads where you can trust the seventh guy in the bullpen to come in and get those three outs at the end. And that Texas game, and I think they were up five, and Scott Carroll came in and didn't get it done at that point.
Right.
Those are the kinds of games you need to be in the position, and then you need to close those out. You can't get into a spot where you absolutely all of a sudden need Robertson to come in. You need some breathers. And even on the other side, it's good. The fact that they came back yesterday kind of hurt them because, now granted, they didn't have the bullpen guys. They didn't have the guys to use. But had they, Robin might have had to go to them in a game when they're down, you know, five runs several times. And those are the kinds of games where it's okay to take a day off. You need those breathers are okay.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to tell the team. It's weird. We, you know, in other sports, you can play at 90% and be, you know, like LeBron James can be at 90 for the first three quarters of a ball game and then turn it on. You can have, you know, a Matt Forte afternoon where, you know, if you've got a couple of ISO plays, you know what you're trying to get. You're rushing for that first down. You don't need the 60-yarder here. In baseball, it doesn't work like that. It's a consistency of effort that gets the job done every time, and you're not going to be able to go into that clubhouse and tell them, guys, relax today. This isn't a team that's going to do that. It's on 100 all times.
Absolutely, and in basketball, those guys get 2 days off. Even in the finals, to come back and rest up, and that helps up. And obviously, you know, they have a day off tomorrow, the White Sox do, and it's their first one in, was it 9 or 10?
9 straight ball games going back to the, well, I did the number, 16th? I think the 16th was the last day off.
Yeah, right before that road trip. And so, yeah, it's definitely a sport where you do have to use all 25 guys, regardless of whether you'd like to or not. It puts you in some tough spots at times.
I like using both catchers in the lineup when the matchups dictate and when you do have the opportunity to do it. It paid off yesterday. I when we spoke to Robin, I think early in spring training, the idea was floated out there that, yeah, we can do this fairly often. Obviously, Avila has the hamstring early on, and that changes the math some. And getting him back to 100% healthy is obviously a priority.
Right.
Do you mind using both catchers in a lineup like that? You like to see it when it's available?
I had no problem with this, especially with the bench as shorthanded as it right now. You're not looking at DHs that, you know, if it's Justin Morneau that you're DH next month, maybe you don't want to lose the DH.
Yeah, different
but
story.
Right now, the way it is, I think losing the DH isn't the most detrimental thing. So when you can get a little bit more flexibility for lineup, we've talked about how Melky Cabrera's hit fifth all year when he's like the prototypical two guy.
Sure.
Because they needed his left-handed, you know, ability in the middle of that
lineup. There. Yeah.
I love the idea of Navarro in there just to give them a switch hitter along with Avila. So, yeah, the flexibility for lineup is a good thing, and they, you know, running out there is not a bad idea.
One catcher in the lineup today, Avila is going to be behind the plate. Todd Frazier off his feet, I guess a little bit. He's going to DH some. Tyler Saladino at third. You know, defensively, Tyler has had moments where the play didn't quite get made. But to be honest, with you know, the smash down to third base against Donaldson 2 days ago, the fact that he's able to keep that in front of him, I think speaks to his athleticism. And the cannon he showed, I mean, granted, it's a catcher running.
Right.
But the cannon he showed from third base was really impressive. I like seeing him in the lineup where you can spot him defensively.
I do, too. I think if you have Tim Anderson and him on the left side there, you're in pretty good shape.
It's a lot of range.
I think you got two of your best gloves on the entire team, Adam Eaton. Frazier, for the most part, he's had a few little spots here and there. But, I mean, those are your best guys. So, really, I put Saladin out there. Behind Chris Sale, you're doing okay there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the other part of this equation. You put that kind of defense out behind your ace, and you hope you can take a series against the Blue Jays this afternoon. Dan, appreciate you stopping by, man. Always good talking about baseball with you.
Absolutely, thanks.
Dan Hayes, CSNChicago.com. You can follow him on Twitter. It is at, I always mess it up,
CSN Hayes.
At CSN Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. At least I got that part right. 312-591-8900. Still a chance to take a phone call or two. We've got your White Sox week in review when we get back as well. All coming up to the start of the pregame show at 12:35. You got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox lay here. WLS. AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Closing it up here, last handful of minutes. We got your White Sox Week in Review. We'll start the pregame show at 12:35, and then Chris Sale will take the bump at 1:10. Head out to the phone lines. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. In Willowbrook, it's our guy Owen. Hey, Owen. Hey, Owen. How you doing, man?
Just fine, Connor. How you doing today?
Fantastic. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know, when guys like Shields were going early, you know, getting Bond early, you know, in the games, I could see them trying to save the bullpen. But yesterday was a launching pad. And here's what I don't think there's any way Gonzalez should face Encarnacion in that fourth inning. The reason being is I know he's trying to save the bullpen, but you had a day off on Monday.
Right.
You got your starter. You got your number one starter going today. You think he's going to at least go seven. Yeah, I think they gave that game away yesterday. And I think he's got to go. He bought an inning in the third.
Yeah, but you got to realize that bullpen has been tapped in a big way. I mean, what say you? I mean, you burn through this bullpen. You have Duke, Robertson, Jones, and Albers who were all out this past ball game. Jones has pitched in 6 of the last 9. Robertson in 5 of the last 9. I mean, why wouldn't you get your guy out there? I mean, at that point, you're trailing, what was it, 7-3. You need Gonzalez to soak up as much as you possibly can.
Well, going into the inning, you were down 5-3, and then he walked out, so you're down 7-3. You face Encarnacion, you give up a base hit, and basically you bought your bullpen an inning and a third. And I just think the way they battled back, and they could see that they were hitting the ball. I just think, you know, and I look at it, when he does it with Shields or the way he was getting by, I can see making your starter go. But sometimes with the Sox, it always seems no matter what, even if they're getting hit, they're going to go 5 no matter what. And sometimes you got to pick your days. You're going to say, hey, we're going to battle back and maybe do something. I mean, the rest of the bullpen only gave up 2 runs the rest of the game.
Yeah, but you can't. Oh, and I appreciate the phone call, man. We got to let you go because we're up against it. We got the White Sox Week in Review to do. I don't think you can, especially when the guys that have to have the day off, the guys that are down for the day, are Robertson, Jones, and Duke. Your 1, 2, and 3 options out of the bullpen. You can't risk them at this point here. I mean, you cannot burn them completely out, or God forbid you've got an injury situation coming up. If one of those guys has something that's barking at him, you can't do that at this point in the season for a ball game that you're trailing big early on. You fight back with the offense and you hope it works, but you know the guys you had out there were the guys you had out there. I think the calculus changes some as you get later on in the season. Perhaps I think the calculus changes a little as maybe you add some to the bullpen as well, or you have a guy like Inoa or maybe Jennings, as he's been pitching really well of late too, step up into some of those bigger situations. But, man, you can't toy with Robertson, Jones, and Duke at this point, especially with Putnam out for an extended period of time, for an unknown period of time. You have to play it safe at certain points, and I think yesterday was one of them because You just don't know. Your next ball game isn't guaranteed to you. It's just not. You have no idea what's going to happen in this ball game today. 312-591-8900, the phone number. Might be able to squeeze in one or two more. Right now, though, we do it every single closing time for the White Sox Weekly Show as we head up to the pregame show. Your week in review.
And a pitch is swinging a line drive to left, over to get it to left field. They're not going to get it in the air. It's going to go to the wall. Ramirez will pick it up and throw it in the second. If Tim Anderson.
Here's a swing and a long one to right. To the line. It's going out on a line drive home run by Cabrera to right field. And the Sox lead 2-1 on that solo shot into the bleachers and right. That's his 6th.
Ortiz swings, bouncing ball off the glove of the pitcher to Anderson. Bare hands, throws on the run. Got him. Nicely done. That's 1-6-3 on the out of David Ortiz. That's some talented shortstop.
He is fun to watch.
Swinging a line drive right center. This is going to put the Sox in front. That may get 2 in. It's going to certainly score Garcia. Eaton races for 3rd. He's getting waved in. The throw coming home. Going to be close. Safe at home plate. Adam Eaton. A 2-run double for Abreu, and the Sox lead here in the 10th at 3-1.
First pitch is swinging a high fly ball to left. This is his first major league home run. Turn on the fireworks here at Fenway. First pitch out of here, and Anderson goes deep over the Green Monster. Romero at second. Fernandez at home plate waits for the 0-2 pitch, and here it is. A swing and a miss, strike three. White Sox win. Sox win, Sox win. And it win for Sale. He goes to 12-2, Darren. And the save for David Robertson, his 18th. Swinging a high fly to left. This is going to be 21, and it ties the game as Frazier goes deep to left. One swinging a long one to left. This is going to go to the monster seats. Lurie hits his 8th, and that went out of the ballpark. All the way out on Lansdowne Street. And the White Sox have 2 home runs in this inning, and now they lead, and they lead 7-6. The pitch swinging a line drive to left. This hit way back to the monster on left. 3-run homer. He's hit his 11th, and the White Sox indeed jump in front on a 3-run homer and lead 7-5. The game on the line. The winning run is at second. Looks to second at the 1-2 to Leon. A swing and a miss. Strike three. We're going extra. One strike to 1-1. Frazier swings. Line drive. Base hit. Sox lead. Nice going, Todd. Anderson scores. We're up 3-2. Tonight where we celebrate hairdos. A hair-raising ninth, if you will, for the Jays. The pitch is swinging a pop-up. This is going to do it. On the infield. Sox win. Sox win. A magician-like ninth for Robertson, his 19th save. The White Sox hold on and beat the Jays 3-2. This one high and deep to left center field. This one's carrying well at the track. At the wall, Pilar dives into the wall and drops the ball. He's hurt. Lurie can circle the bases. He's around third. Coming home, the throw by Tulowitzki holds on inside the park homer. Here's a swing and a line drive to right. This is hit way back. Line drive home run. Back they go. As Navarro goes deep to right. It's now 5-2 Toronto. Balls, two strikes to 2-2. Swinging a long one right center field. This is tagged. Bag. The trio of home runs. Here in the White Sox second with 2 outs. They go back to back to back.
That's the Week in Review here on White Sox Weekly. We're coming up against the pregame show. MLB.TV Premium is the number one live streaming sports service, and it delivers everything you've come to expect and more. Watch every out-of-market game live in HD on over 400 supported devices. It includes a free subscription to At-Bat Premium, the number one app for live baseball. Blackout and other restrictions apply, but visit MLB.TV for details. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks for joining us. Stop by listening on your way out to the ballpark or whatever you're up to this Sunday afternoon. Thanks to Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com for hanging out. Thanks to Robin Ventura for spending a little time with us earlier in the homestand, talking a little bit about the five-man infield. Thanks to Phil Rogers of MLB.com. Pre-game show's coming up in just a handful of minutes. It's Chris Sale and Marcus Stroman as the White Sox take on the Blue Jays. We'll send you to the news here at 12:30. White Sox baseball's next on WLS AM 890.